It's Tuesday, November 12th, 2013, and you're listening to episode 319 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 32 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
My name's Chad.
And my name is Pat.
All right, three announcements. We'll knock them out real quick. First
poop
off,
sock.
Poop sock. Yeah, I hope you poop socked the past week. If not, I'm coming for you.
Whoa.
Fear the Con nice. 7. Signups are still rolling for that. Fearthecon.com. The two other announcements, these are both new ones. First off, Mikey Mason, Fear the Boot's official comedian, has dropped a new
other career.
That's
except
correct.
That he is our
that's
official
it.
Comedian.
That's it.
That's it. That's all we pay him for.
Yeah. I send him just stamps every so often. They might be postal stamps, food stamps, acid stamps. Who knows?
Whoa.
But he just gets a stamp every so often, and that's his form of payment.
That's right.
But anyway, he has just dropped a new geek comedy album called Dangerous Gifts. If you like Mikey Mason's comedy, and I know you do,
you better
check out the show notes because I will have links to where you can get Dangerous Gifts and check out his new material. I don't know if he'll be performing anything from it at Fear the Con 7. I'd imagine he would be, but I don't know. That's right.
Hey, we're his bosses. We tell him what to do.
I will send him the right kind of stamp to make him say yes.
So
yes.
Dan,
it will be a dangerous gift.
So Dan, I bought this right away and I was listening to it and there's an acoustic song on there. So I've been trying to pressure Mikey out there on Facebook to release an all acoustic album. Because he's done this on a few other CDs where he's released one of his songs just on the CD and one in acoustic. And his acoustic stuff, I really am enjoying. So everyone should hassle Mikey for an acoustic album.
You're going to have to really sell me on this because I'm going to be just straight up and telling you I generally hate acoustic music. Acoustic rock music.
Yeah, but this is Mikey's acoustic stuff.
All right.
Think about the everything he does at the con is acoustic.
No. So, all right.
That was his own point.
Okay.
I'm using his point against him.
Fine. Okay. I may not participate in this, but I will at least play Switzerland and not get involved apart from piling up stolen goods. That was, in fact, a really terrible analogy. Pretend I didn't say that. All right. The other announcement, our final announcement, is coming up March 7th through 9th, 2014, in Biloxi, Mississippi, is a convention called CoastCon. So if you are out there down in the South, and you're looking for a convention that you can hit up March 7th through 9th, 2014, then be sure to check the show notes for a link to a convention called CoastCon, which is running right out there in Biloxi. And I'm sure they would love to see you, so be sure to drop by and give them some love. Alrighty, so with that out of the way, we are ready to get back into bosses. For anyone who missed the last episode, a boss in this context is a BAUS, beautiful and unique snowflake, a character who is special in all the right ways. And so we were talking about being a boss, and I stopped you guys from talking about levels of bosses. So, Chad, go ahead. Levels of bosses. You are free to go.
Exactly. He's already forgotten.
Huh?
It's only been
it's
5 minutes.
It's been a week. It's been a whole week.
Pat, I'm tapping you. Am I?
So,
I don't even know what levels of bosses. It's
gonna,
a Chad
we're
thing.
We're getting to the point where the coach is going to have to come out and pinch hit.
Yes.
Okay. So, what a level of boss is, the idea behind a person making a character, and the character is a beautiful and unique snowflake, is that everyone wants to make their character a beautiful and unique snowflake. So if everyone around the table is making a beautiful and unique snowflake, then what happens when one of them overshadows the other? What happens if all of them overshadow one? What happens if all of them are all, you know, all over the place? Well, you kind of got to have a baseline here of, we'll just say a scale of 1 to 10. This is your boss level. So on a 1, you are Ted from accounting. On a 10, your character is Galactus. His race, class, background, history is Galactus the Planet Eater. Pretty out there sort of character right. concept to be playing in a role-playing game. And so what happens is that if everyone is playing at a boss level one, let's say that we're playing a modern-day fantasy or a modern-day game.
Okay.
And it could be like a Dresden Tile or whatever. And we're all playing level one where we're playing like normal people, but we're going to be in this extreme situation, right? And it's going to be really interesting. And then we explore how the horrors and evils of modern phantasmagoria affect normal people. So our boss level for our characters is level 1. Well, then you have Pat. This hole is like, I am going to play Galactus, the Planet Eater. Purple headdress, everything. My boss level is 10. Hey, guys, I'm Galactus. And you're like, hey, I'm Ted from accounting. How are you?
We saw Galactus last year at San Diego Comic Con. Yeah. Did you see that? I took pictures of it. I know I took pictures. He was a very good.
Fantastic. Thank you.
He was Galactus.
I would break boss levels down.
Obviously, this is an extreme example.
Right, right. I think I could put it just into 3 levels.
Well, let me. Do you see the issue, though?
No, I do.
Where it's just like, yeah, the people who are at boss level 1 are interesting,
right.
Well-rounded, you could have, cool characters.
You could have 3 people that are playing accountants that have really interesting family lives and personalities and backgrounds. Yeah. But Pat is playing Galactus. Yeah.
And we're not even talking...
No distinction between Wayne's accountant and my accountant comes close to the level of distinction between any accountant and Galactus.
Yes. Or,
another example.
Want to be an accountant.
We're all playing billionaires, but Dan is playing Batman.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely. Uh-huh. That would be like our boss level is 6, but of course Batman takes it up to 11. It could be on a bunch of different layers. Hey, so,
but look, I'm bored with eating planets. I want to learn accounting.
Yes. Okay. You're turning over a new leaf.
Yes. I'm turning over an entire new quadrant.
Did you check out the game last night? Yeah. I totally didn't eat the planet so the game could go on.
Sports ball by the water cooler.
Yeah.
So let's take it at a mechanical level.
Okay.
Accountants have like stapler ability and that's really about it. And they have office supplies. Galactus is eating planets. So, you know, mechanically wise, Galactus
but
is a bit
how
more powerful.
Often is eating the planet but, actually going to come in as a valuable thing for the game?
Yeah.
What I'm saying.
What's the bottom line to an accountant on eating a planet? See?
Yeah.
So let's take mechanics off the table. Let's say we're playing some crazy story stick game where there's no combat. There's no mechanics. There's not even any dice. And it's just the kind of game Dan loves. So we have these accountants at level 1 of their boss level. We have Galactus at level 10. And now, conceptually, it doesn't work because we're accountants. And it's why is Galactus there? Why are the accountants there? Why are the accountants hanging out with Galactus? Yeah, that's great for a one shot. That's fun for a hilarious party game, but like an ongoing serious campaign, it just doesn't work.
Let me give a slightly different way that I would break down the bosses. And I think yours is perfectly valid, but I think there's a different way of approaching it.
Sure.
So there's a second way of looking at it. And
does it have Galactus in your?
It could.
Okay.
Which
that's what's important.
There are basically 3, maybe not levels, but types of boss distinction.
Mm-hmm.
Level 1 is the very subtle. It's personality, it's background, it's social context, family life, things like that. Right. It's the sorts of things that would generally distinguish regular human beings from each other in the real world. The second one I would take up to the level of something that would be like archetype, class and race, depending on the game. You're a mage versus a fighter. You're a mech warrior versus a technician. Mm-hmm. You know, you work in engineering on the Enterprise versus being the helmsman. Mm-hmm. All right. There's a distinction here that really sets you wildly apart from the next person in terms of how you function in day-to-day activities. And then I think the third level is where you just take that up to an 11 and you've basically reached the point of splat.
Right.
Where you have brought in something that is so out of context. For example, let's say that we're playing a game.
We're playing Dresden. Pat wants to play a 40K Space Marine.
Yeah, something like that. But let's say we're playing Pathfinder.
Mm-hmm. And Pat wants to play a 40K Space Marine.
And we're all operating at boss level 2.
Sure.
Because we're all playing different races and classes. Mm-hmm. We have a gnomish wizard and, you know, an elven fighter and whatever else going on. Okay. You just have the regular stuff going on. And then somebody busts out a splat book and says, you know what? Screw this. I'm going to play a pixie psionicist ninja.
Werepire.
And I totally download this off of a legit website because it's on the internet.
Yeah.
And that's what they want to play. And this is something that just has no context within the rest of anything else that's going on. Let's say
it might even have context within the world. Like, say we're playing Forgotten Realms or something. And that exists in Forgotten Realms, but it doesn't have a context within what's going on with the group.
Yeah. Right now, every game master out there, let me warn...
cringing at this?
No, no. Let me warn you right now about the biggest load of bullshit you will ever hear in your GMing career. I'm going to be a level 3 boss, but it's totally never going to come up.
Yes. Yes.
I'm going to play... It's Star Trek. I'm going to be a guy from the Q Continuum. But I can't use any of my Q powers.
Yeah.
We're going to play reporters... Oh, by the way, Wayne's playing Clark Kent. This will never come up in the game.
Because right. This is all about reporters,
right,
guys.
Right, right, right. Yeah. So he has to keep that a secret. He can't let us know he's Superman.
Yeah.
Seriously, I could not go to every farm on the face of the planet and shovel enough bullshit together to reach that level. Do not ever believe that. If somebody wants to be it, it's because they want to be it.
Yes.
And so don't ever buy into that. If somebody puts down that they are playing X, X is going to come up. It is going to be part of their character. If it's not, you ask them a simple question. Well, if it's never going to come up, why do you need to play Superman? Yeah, it's what I thought. Bitch, let's erase Clark Kent and write down something else.
Clark.
That leads to the big thing for Clint. Me is... At that point, you have to wonder, what is it about the character
that
they...
I could have mispronounced that in a really offensive way.
Yes.
So at that point, I have to wonder, and I think this is what you would need to talk to the player about. What is it about what they're pitching that they find appealing? What is it about it that's special to them?
Mm-hmm.
Because you may not be on the same page with them, especially, like we said, we are all different boss level ones. We have different histories, different exposures. Going back to one of the first fantasy games we played in, we ran into a troll in the game. A troll for me meant something very differently than it meant to everyone else.
He saw a fat guy on the internet. You guys saw this big scaly thing.
Well, you guys started talking about healing, and it's like, a troll can heal?
I thought they were just racists.
It wasn't a concept I was familiar with, because the only troll I had ever seen are the old book stories about trolls under the bridge, and WoW. That was my only frame of reference for troll.
So the idea of regeneration and...
Right. All completely different. Yeah. So that's, I think, one of the first things you need to have that conversation. If someone comes to you and says, well, I want to be Q, you say, what is it about Q that you find appealing?
Yeah.
And you may come up with...
The godlike powers.
Well,
if the answer is, I want to have the godlike powers, well, then you've got a problem.
Well,
but if they come back and say... Well, there was this one episode of Star Trek where there was a girl who realized she was a Q and she's struggling with it. And you know the episode I'm talking about, I'm sure. You could get to the heart of what they were really going for there, and you might be able to make it work.
Fine. Mm-hmm. You're not Absolutely. Q. You're from a relatively normal alien race, but you do have a unique heritage. You're from a race that's psionic, but no more psionic than, say, a Deltan or a Betazoid or a Vulcan would be. But you're next in line for some throne or something like that. And
if
you
what they
don't
want is
it.
The power level, that's not going to work.
The
if what they want are the aspects of that, that can work.
And I would certainly be willing to give someone a fair hearing on that. But what I have found is typically people don't give me an honest answer. And an easy way to ferret that out is when you start trying to negotiate, if there's no room for negotiation, you've caught them in their BS. If someone says, I want to play a Q, you say, well, why? Well, because of this one episode about them kind of discovering their destiny. Great. You're a regular humanoid level power alien who's in line for a throne. Oh, that's not sufficient. Okay. Come on.
Yeah.
Out with it. Yeah. Stop playing the game.
And that's the real point, is getting to the heart of what they really want.
Absolutely. It's definitely about opening up a dialogue.
If you immediately assume that what they want out of it is one thing, and that's where you start the dialogue, that can backfire pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like if you just went to them and said, you're just wanting to play Q because of the super high power level and all of this, but what they really wanted was just...
That's fair.
That comes off as a bit condescending, and that can lead to some backlash.
No,
right away.
And that's very fair. And I will say, in my history, probably in most groups I've been in with a really wide diversity of people, every time that's come up, there has been a more nefarious desire. But in fairness to the players around the table, I can't carry that kind of cynicism forward. I need to at least give them a fair hearing. And it may be BS, but I ought to at least give them a chance to try and sell me on why this is a good idea and then negotiate with them to say, okay, is there some way we can scratch that itch and give you the kind of boss you want, even if it's not the level of boss you want?
Yeah, and that leads to something else around the table as well. If somebody can't sit down and said, I want to play Q, other players at the table may already be thinking this is a bad idea.
Right.
The GM should not be the only one that has to say something. The other players should be able to ask right then and there. Don't let it wait. Don't let it last, mm-hmm. you know, into the week. The thought should come out right then and there.
Well,
so you can get to what are they really getting for?
Well, I think that it's a conversation that should be had during character creation.
Yes.
And, you know, when you're creating characters and you're talking about it and you're arranging things and stuff. But the game is ongoing and then it gets brought up. Well, then, yeah, you're in for a bunch of problems. But yeah, it should wait until we're sitting down and we're creating characters.
Now, we've talked about the levels, I think the levels 2 and 3, as you've mentioned. And I think we kind of glossed over 1 a little bit. I want to go back to that because I think there are some very important considerations for just the level 1, which was the personality of characters within the party. Because, and this is something that I think that we have some experience with and we've seen. And what I mean by that is a party, you want to, generally speaking, have a group that have a common goal and common interests. You know, they don't have to be lockstep into it, but I mean, in general, you know, loosely based, they're all in this.
They all
they're
need to
friendly.
Have
a, they're on friendly terms. Whatever.
They're generally moving the same direction.
Yeah, exactly.
They all need to have a reason to be together.
Right. In that, everyone's going to have their personalities, but I think you have to be careful when you're making your character to consider that in the kind of interactions you want to have with the rest of the people in the group. If this is a very social game and you're going to play like the introverted person that just wants to hide, you know, like the Raven character, maybe from Teen Titans is a good example. She's very shy. She never wants to say anything. She's just going to hide in the corner the whole time, but it's a very social game. That could be an issue because mm-hmm. just because everyone's going to overshadow you.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're going to sit there and never do anything.
That's an interesting point. It's like you are a beautiful and unique snowflake in your own mind.
Yeah.
Played characters.
Well,
like that.
there was a BattleTech character like that, Chad, that mm-hmm. you talked me out of playing because you said that this guy is a fascinating character, but all of the interesting stuff mm-hmm. is going on in his head. It's not playing out at the table. And I was going to play him as a PC in a BattleTech game somebody else was running.
Mm-hmm.
And when I kind of said, hey, I ought to play this guy. And you're like, no, it's a bad idea because mm-hmm. it's all in his head.
And I called you a bitch, too. But
yeah. And then but, you know, and I think certainly, Pat, along those lines, I think the game master also needs to be involved in this process to say, OK, if we're dealing with a level one boss and you're saying to me that your personality is this, that, and that, and your minor skills, you know, your kind of flavor skills are this, this, and this, but those are never going to come up in the game. I either need to warn you off from that or I need to adjust my game because, you know, as a game master, I can't expect you to just magically know anything I've not told you.
Sure.
And so if you make a character where, let's go back to Star Trek, you're playing an engineer and your specialty is in warp drive mechanics, and your subskills are in life sciences, but I know that the entire campaign is going to take place with you guys trapped in a dimension where warp physics don't work, and you're dealing with crystalline entities that have no
life,
carbon biology, you're freaking worthless. Congratulations.
Yeah. Mechanically,
you're unique and worthless. You are a beautiful and unique snowflake falling on the desert.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Right. Yeah. You know, and we're talking about a lot of this from the player perspective, too, but there's game master issues. So let's take your Star Trek game, for instance, where we're all these really cool, individualistic, red-shirted engineers, which still sounds like a cool game to me, but you have the one person who's playing Q. So obviously, so we're all at, like, boss level 3. Boom, somebody's up to level 20 or whatever.
Or our Dresden game where your ward, a big troll that can crush everything.
Okay, I have something to say on that, too. In the Star Trek game, you're playing Q, and the game master's running it, and it's just like, okay, we have a bunch of normal, relatively normal people. I mean, it's Star Trek, so there are aliens and stuff, but relatively normal for the universe stuff. And then we have Q. So this game is either going to be all about Q, or it's not about Q at all. Or maybe there'll be like one game where there's Q.
Yeah, it does kind of force a dichotomy.
Yeah. And remember, I mean, it's all about the spotlight.
Right.
Moving it around and moving it around. And see, that's what the boss level does. The boss level pulls spotlight, but it's relative. So if everybody is at the same level, everyone's pulling that spotlight equally, and it works.
Yeah, let's say we're playing a Transformers game, and you three are playing Decepticons, and I'm playing Unicron.
Mm-hmm.
What story can the Game Master possibly tell that's going to involve all four of us equally? Yeah. Okay, granted, with careful writing, you might come up with one or two. A campaign?
Yeah.
I don't buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think there's a point here that I really want to emphasize that we've been saying, but perhaps not saying directly.
Mm-hmm.
Years back, we did what I think was one of our better shows, which was on something we called Freak Show Characters.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for anyone who didn't follow the show that far back.
Yeah, Baus is different than Freak Show Characters.
Right, well, that's what I want to emphasize. Related, yeah. That's what I want to emphasize. Is when we talked about Freak Show Characters, the idea was that you're playing... We'll just keep using D&D because everybody knows it. All right, you're playing D&D. We have a dwarven warrior, an elven wizard, a human cleric, and then one jackass has to play. I'll pick on myself here because I love this race and nobody will really play it. One guy has to be the Waymick splat class. I don't even know what, you know, yes. Wind Whisperer or something just ridiculous like that.
Mm.
And your character is suddenly... this freak that has no context in the rest of the world, does not belong in the world, does not belong in this party. And one thing that I want to emphasize, if you have not gotten this from the subtext of our conversation, then let me just say it explicitly right now. A character can be made unique at any of these boss levels without resorting to a freak show.
Yeah.
You can make yourself different from the guy next to you, whether we're talking about accountants, whether we're talking about a D&D party, or whether we're talking about Galactus and Unicron, you can make your guy different from the guy next to you without resorting to something that is a complete, out-of-nowhere freak.
Yeah. I think it's context, a lot of it.
I also think it's a fine line. One person's boss is another person's freak show.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we look at the Epoch of Rhysos game that Dan ran, I would kind of look at your character that had all the robots. To me, he was a freak show compared to everyone else on the ship. But I'm betting that you would look at that character and be like, no, he was just unique.
I would say you are correct.
Was in the context of the party, but he was a freak show? Yeah, in the context of the universe,
exactly.
He's not.
That's what
happened. That's why I said it's a fine line.
See, that's what happened in that game. And I don't know if we talked about this game a whole lot on the show, but my character had a whole bunch of robots. He had all these cybernetics.
He's also transhuman.
Also transhuman. Because I have played multiple games of Epoch of Rhysos through its many different iterations. I'm not saying I'm an expert at. I feel I understand it. I kind of get large aspects of it.
It's one of those concepts I keep coming back to is that gamers bring a lot of baggage to the table.
And yeah, you're right, though. I mean, he was...
But nobody else...
Within the context of the party, he was a freak show.
Right, yep.
But from my perspective, knowing the universe, his character was unusual, but I would not have taken him to the level of freak show.
Well, and
he was not some trans-dimensional being of light or whatever. Well,
and that's why I say it's a fine line, because you have the full context, you have the full history.
Right.
And I think of that world. To me, he was a freak show.
Yeah. But I want to talk about making, not a freak show, but making a character that is a high level of Baus, whether it's class or whatever, personality, background, whatever, in a party where everybody in the party is a much lower level, and making that work.
Okay.
And what I'm going to do is I'm going to toot my own horn, because I was able to successfully do that in a recent campaign.
Okay, I'd love to hear this story.
Yes. It was our Dresden game, but it's not Ward. His Baus level was high. He was also a freak show.
I think we have some mechanical issues with Ward. So that's
because I did not understand how characters were made in Dresden.
Right.
And I accidentally made the most powerful character you can make in Dresden. I mean, this guy was just insane.
We actually have some mechanical issues where we need to look at it, and his numbers are off. But
so anyway, but yeah, that aside, I made a second character when we did our second chapter. Now, let's put some context on everything. Everybody has pretty high level Baus because this is Dresden, but within the context, it's pretty good. You're playing a character that is a emissary of power.
Yes.
You're not a god, but you're kind of have the backing of a god who's in the shadows and stuff and gives you a little bit of power and whatnot. And you're old. You're very, very old. And
she's my excuse to flirt with Pat at the table.
Yes. Exactly. And I love it.
And that is Beth's weird so jealous. In and of itself.
Natural.
It's not weird at all.
Beth is a
person. I love redheads.
Beth is a person who has one of the...
She's a Knight of the Cross.
Knight of the Cross. But her character doesn't understand like why she's there, and she's very conflicted, and it's an interesting character. Again,
she's not the greatest American Knight of the Cross. Yeah,
she's not blowing the top off of the world there. John, when he was with us, he was playing a lawyer, a blood-sucking vampire lawyer, literally.
Literally.
Ha ha ha.
Except he was so it wasn't actually blood, but it's close enough.
Yes. Close enough. That's the joke we kept making. Dawn was playing a witch who was just a wizard and like Dresden only with water.
Sarah's unique aspect is that she is a pure mortal.
Right.
Which is very good in the system.
Yeah, yeah. But she was interacting with all this stuff. Now, my character was an immortal trickster god from the Fae where I had...
We did bend the rules a little bit to make this happen. Too.
So what he did... is that he was a coyote, a spirit of coyote, and the trickster archetype in the classical archetypes of literature and stuff.
Right, right,
the trickster.
The trickster spirit, yeah.
And what his background was is that he was summer court, and he was able to, through lies and deceptions, again, we kind of bent the universe a little bit because Faye can't lie, but my character can because he's a trickster. And he, through lies and deception, he turned the entire summer court against... the queen, Titania, I think we picked, and almost overthrew her in sort of a Loki-esque sort of thing.
Okay.
And failed at the end and was expelled from the Fae permanently. I can't even tell you how old he is because he is as old as time itself. He's immortal.
He's been trapped for 2,000
years. He's been trapped for 2,000 years and was accidentally freed and came about, and there he is. And I played him. Obviously, this is Galactus next to all these other guys. But what I did, I've run games before, I've been gaming for a long time, and I pulled him back. Mechanically, I didn't give him any combat powers. All of his powers revolved around deceit, deception, lying, illusions. He was an illusionist. He can create, what's it called? Glamours.
Glamours,
yeah, he was really good at glamours, but he couldn't drive people insane. He couldn't crush them with them or anything like that. His personality was that of a coyote, not some mastermind puppet master where he's influencing everyone around him. I mean, it's like he had the attention span of a dog. His favorite thing in the world was chicken nuggets. He's like, you people have gourmet food. You have chicken nuggets because, you know, you give a chicken nugget to a dog. They're really going to love it.
Well, I mean, one of the first questions when you hear a character like that is the question of, OK, well, why would that character stick with the group?
Because he really likes them.
And that's something that was dealt with early on is what is his connection to each of the people in the group and where does he live and all of that? Because that was thought about ahead of time because knowing that could be a character that just has no reason to be there.
Yeah, he saw the group as his pack. And he had this unwavering loyalty to this group. And he would play minor tricks on them and stuff, but it was more all the tricks he played on the characters backfired on him and became embarrassing to him.
Which kind of makes sense, because if you read up on... I know this is someone who has coyotes living behind his house. Coyote packs are somewhat different from wolf packs or dog packs. They kind of have this love-hate relationship with each other.
Yeah, I actually read
far more so than dog packs and wolf packs do.
I read up a lot on coyotes and about how Native Americans see coyotes and about their spirits and stuff. And I made a really detailed background. And I made sure my character conceptually was designed to accentuate other characters, to play off of their personalities, to get the people to role play and to push them into situations where they, not in a bad way, not like, hey, let's go rob a bank or, hey, let's do something you don't want to do, but more like encourage them and to get them and to point out things that would stop them.
And I think some of this you can control simply just by sheer rules. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you make that character following the same character creation rules as everybody else, you can say he's a billion-year-old god. But if on paper, all he can do is the same level of things as everyone else.
Absolutely.
His functional boss level is no longer Galactus.
Yeah.
You know, his story boss level might be Galactus, but his functional boss level is really back down at the same as being no different than any other party member. You know, I could do the same thing if we played a Transformers game and I was playing Unicron, but something happened to where Unicron got shrunk down to the size of every other Transformer.
And if you were running this game, Dan, Wayne knew where I was coming from, and I, you know, you communicate with different people in different ways.
Yeah, all right, sure.
So how I would communicate with you if you were running this game is that, you know, hey, Dan, I really want to play this infinite, old, immortal, god, coyote character. And you'd be like, no, try again. But actually, you'd be fair. You'd be like, okay, why do you want to play? Like we talked in the other episode, why do you want to play? What are you getting out of this? And I would pitch it to you. I really want to play that trickster archetype. I want to play the Loki. I want to play the Native American trickster. I want to play the Japanese fox. I want to play that sort of nature trickster archetype. And it's not about the power. In fact, my other character was a better murderer than this one is.
Right.
He killed untold numbers of people. He killed more people than the entire group combined.
Well, and this character
didn't kill
anybody. This character has panic buttons.
Yes.
Not just mechanically. This character has Coyote has story panic buttons.
Yeah, and that's another thing, is I programmed in panic buttons that Wayne could use, and I let him know them, too.
If the character is ever getting out of control, and an immortal character, he has all of this history, if that is going to get in the way of the story, I have a way to keep that in check, and that's built into the character's personality. Mm-hmm. That actually helped a lot.
Mm-hmm. But I went into it trying to be really, this is going to sound really egotistical. I really went into it trying to having the character be so much more than all the other characters, but play him to where he wasn't.
Right.
And where he was really trying to lift
and
the rails up.
We can draw one more episode out of this. And what I want to talk about in the next episode is going to be examples of times that we have tried this, or even just theories we have on how to approach this. And I actually have one that John wanted me to cover on the show that I've got a note on here, which I'll cover on his behalf, since he's currently living in Jefferson City. Hoping to move back to St. Louis soon, but at the moment he's living about 2 hours away. So anyway, we'll hold this one here. This is going to be a three-parter. So thank you guys for tuning in. As before, stay right at your computers.
Don't take the headphones off.
Keep making events for Fear the Con 7. Switch socks. You have two. You can move another one. And we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2013. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.